Hello, this is David Coulthard.
Hi, I'm Mark Webber here.
Great drive, Mark. Fantastic. We've won the constructors. Thank you. Well done.
Hi, this is Sebastian Vettel.
You're the world champion. You're the triple world champion, Sebastian Vettel. You are the man. You're a triple world champion.
Can I do donut?
Donuts will not be required, thank you.
Take that as a yes, then.
Hello and welcome to the Infinity Red Bull Racing Podcast. Our third outing of the season brings us back to the scene of our first historic victory, the Shanghai International Circuit. It was here in 2009 in monsoon-like conditions that Sebastian Vettel took the chequered flag ahead of teammate Mark Webber to secure our maiden F1 win and our first 1-2 finish. Severe on tyres, the 16-corner circuit hosted Formula One racing for the first time in September 2004. And has produced a different winner in each race since, except for this year. We'll come on to that soon. Coming up on the podcast, we speak to Sebastian and Mark about their Chinese Grand Prix. We have an exclusive chat with Chinese super DJ Jam Master A, plus we catch up with Christian Horner. First, at the last race in Malaysia, our pit crew broke the record for the fastest pit stop with 2.05 seconds. Katie caught up with Ollie Schack to find out how they managed it.
Okay, so I'm here with Ollie Schack, who's number two mechanic for Sebastian Vettel's car. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
I wanted to catch up with you about pit stops, because at the last race, amongst everything else going on, we actually got five pit stops that beat the previous record set by McLaren, and I believe the fastest was 2.05 seconds. I mean, that's not very long, so just talk us through what it feels like when you're part of that.
To be honest, it happens with a flick of an eye. By the time you've done your job and you look up, the car's gone. That's when you know it had been a really good pit stop, and it's very synchronized. I wouldn't say you can see it's a good stop. You just got this feeling that, you know, it's a little bit of noise and it's quiet for a second when the wheels get put on, and then and the car's gone in a blink of an eye.
And are you thinking, or is it automatic reactions?
Very automatic. Of course, there's a certain level of preparation. I personally prepare myself in my mind before we go out. As soon as you hear what we're going to do, you prepare yourself in a sort of mental way, and then you feel like you've done the first stop in your head already. I think it's a common thing with some drivers, you know, do a lap in their head before they go out, or do the start procedure before, and I do the same. I go through it in my head before, so it's sort of the second stop. If it's the first stop in the race, for me it's the second stop already. The first one has been done already, so that's my way of doing it.
Sorry, there's a very loud helicopter above us, but over the noise, do you get nervous?
No, not at all. You obviously feel a different sense of pressure, but I think that's quite natural. I think drivers do as well when they do a qualifying lap, and I think it'd be wrong not to. That's what builds you up towards it.
On to the race now, and Sebastian Vettel claimed a battling fourth place in Shanghai in a tactical battle that saw him use a different strategy to those cars ahead of him on the Chinese Grand Prix grid. Seb began the race in ninth place on the medium tyre, and hoping to maximise its durability against the soft tyres of the seven rivals at the front of the grid. He was competitive throughout, but was eventually passed for P1 by Fernando Alonso on a fresh set of medium tyres that would see the Ferrari driver through to the end. Sebastian needed to stop again for soft tyres, but following his visit to the pit lane, he utilised the much better pace of the fresh soft tyres to make a late charge. He eventually finished fourth, just 0.2 seconds adrift of third place Lewis Hamilton, and just 2 seconds behind Kimi Raikkonen, who finished in P2. Here is Sebastian after the race.
Well, I think the team obviously told me that there's quite a big gap, but there's also a big gap to the car behind, so why not? When I came onto the long straight for the first time and saw Lewis just, turning the car at the hairpin, I thought, well, that's a little bit too far away. But obviously we had much more speed on the fresher tyres. A little bit disappointing to lose out just by that tiny bit, a couple of corners more, and we could have tried something, but that's how it is. I think, nonetheless, our strategy seemed to work today. Obviously, we knew it's difficult and it will be crucial in the beginning to get clean laps, which, to be fair, the first thing we did not. I was faster than Nico, but then if you follow another car, then you just lean on your front tires quite a little bit too much, and it was difficult to find the right compromise. Later on, obviously, you try to make it up in terms of range to make sure that you don't run out of tyres at the end of the race, but I think overall we can be happy.
Mark, meanwhile, endured a tough afternoon after starting from the pit lane following his demotion to the back of the grid yesterday due to a qualifying fuel problem. He hustled his way towards the top 10 in the opening laps, but a collision with Toro Rosso's Jean-Éric Vergne forced a visit to the pits for a new nose cone and fresh tyres. Within moments of rejoining, Marc reported a problem with the right rear wheel, and before he could return to the pit lane, the wheel detached, forcing him to retire. The incident with Vergne was later investigated by the race stewards, and Marc was adjudged to have caused the collision. He will take a three-place grid penalty for next weekend's Bahrain Grand Prix. Here is Marc after the race.
First of all, the start of the race was going okay. We obviously elected to get rid of the other tyre quite quickly, then regrouping from there, coming back through the field a little bit. Yeah, and got to Jean-Éric down in turn six, and looked like he was. Yeah, I think, you know, I was coming from a regional distance behind, but he knew I was out. I think, and then he was really, really wide. I looked like he was actually opening the corner and giving me the sort of line, and then when it became obvious we're getting close to the apex, he's like, he wanted to hit the apex. So disappointing. I think that. Which he's entitled to, but I thought that even if he ran around the outside, he would have got an exit, we both would have survived, but in the end, I couldn't do much once I was sort of committed down the inside, and then still wasn't into the world, actually, because it was not far off, okay, a couple of laps short of our stop gap, stop window, come in, change your nose. As far as I know, the guys thought the tyre was fixed when we left, but the wheels come off on the outlap. You know, I just really still enjoyed driving the car, but every time we went out, especially yesterday and today, we had problems. So, yeah, I was still enjoying driving in the race, but we could have done something from there. But in the end, you know, like I say, it wasn't meant to be.
Much of the race this weekend was built on strategy. Laura went to speak to the man behind ours, Will Courtney.
Okay, so I'm joined by Will Courtney, who's our head of race strategy. Will, could you just explain to our listeners what your role entails for the team?
Yeah, so I travel to all the races, and basically I'm in charge of making the strategy recommendations. So in terms of simple terms, when we make our pit stops, what tyres we fit, our qualifying sort of run plans and things like that, anything to do with tyres and pit stops, basically.
And what kind of things did you specifically consider from that point of view for the Shanghai circuit?
Obviously for China we had quite a big difference in the tyres. The option was a very sort of fragile tyre, the prime was a lot more robust. So for here, as you saw in qualifying, a lot of the guys started on the option tyre, which we knew wasn't going to last very long, and a few other cars obviously chose to either not run or start on the prime tyre. So that was quite an unusual trade-off for this race compared to what we'd normally see.
And how complicated was this race?
Yeah, it was a pretty tricky one, this one. Obviously, with Seb starting on the prime, we were on quite a different strategy to a lot of the other cars around us. So normally there's a certain amount of following the leader and you're trying to undercut other cars. Here we're doing something very different. So the sort of priorities and the things you're looking at are quite different to a standard race.
And what's next for you? Do you go straight on to Bahrain, start planning that strategy, or are you staying in China for a few days?
No, we're off to Bahrain tomorrow. We'll do a bit of work there, reviewing the China race, things we can learn from it, and then prepping towards the Bahrain race next weekend. So, yeah, it's a pretty quick turnaround.
No rest for the wicked.
No, sadly not.
Okay, thanks, Will.
Formula One attracts stars from around the world. We were lucky enough to have Chinese superstar DJ Jam Master A as our guest DJ this weekend. Laura spoke to him to find out what he's been up to.
So I'm joined by Jam Master A. Jam Master, could you start by telling our listeners what inspired your name?
Actually, my name is kind of inspired by my music. Actually, my music is kind of oriental and mixed with trance music. So it's kind of a jam session. That's why my name is called Jam Master.
Okay, and what part of China are you from?
Actually, I'm from Hong Kong, and my hometown is from Vancouver.
And what brings you to the circuit today?
Actually, Sennheiser is my sponsor who bring me to this event, and I do two sets in Sennheiser stage and Red Bull VIP room, so I'm kind of excited.
We've read through your biography, it's very, very impressive, but if you could just highlight some of your key achievements to our listeners.
The biggest tracks I have is called Bells of Tiananmen, released from 2006 and by Spinning Records in Holland. And after that, world number one DJ Tiesto pick up this track and play a lot in all his concerts and make that track become a trance anthem in Europe. And this track has been voted by Armin van Buuren into world top 1,000 trance tracks. It's one of the trance 1,000.
And did you play that track up in Paddock Club today?
Yeah. Actually, I played a chilled out version today in the VIP room. The sound is kind of a mixture of Chinese instruments. It's called guzheng. It's a very traditional old Chinese instrument and mixed into trance. So the name I call Bells of Tiananmen.
And can you teach us a couple of phrases in Chinese?
Ni hao ma?
Ni hao ma?
Ni hao ma means how are you?
Okay.
And 我爱你 means I love you.
我爱你.
对. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's definitely going to come in handy. Maybe tonight.
Yeah.
And then last question. If you were to produce a track that kind of represented the sound of Formula One and of Red Bull Racing through your experience here today, what do you think it would sound like? What elements would you include and why?
To me, if I produce a track for Red Bull Racing and F1 and Sennheiser, I think maybe a big room trance electro, but in the breakdown I'll put a lot of car racing sound, woo, with a stereophonic,
yeah.
And maybe putting the engine sound into the turn into a big lead, and
nice.
Then build up the whole track and everyone goes wild. That's the idea.
Okay, great. Well, hopefully you can put that into practice.
Yeah, I think if Red Bull interested, you can ask me. I will do it 100% for you guys.
Okay, well, that's definitely something to work with. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We are very interested, Jam Master. Let's have a listen to some of his engine noises again. Yeah, that's going to be a hit, no doubt about it. Jam was here entertaining our guests in the paddock suite. Laura spoke to our hospitality coordinator, Georgie Russell, to find out what goes on in the planning for it all.
So I'm joined by Georgie Russell, who's our hospitality coordinator. Georgie, could you start by telling our listeners what your role entails for the team?
So working alongside the hospitality manager, we work together to basically provide a really bespoke high-end service for all of our team partners. So we work with the account managers and we offer them top of the range hospitality throughout an entire Formula One weekend. Everything from travel, hotels to entertainment at the trackside, meet and greets with drivers, tours of the garage, and everything else that a guest could possibly ask for while they're with us.
Okay, so the creme de la creme of the Formula One experience.
Indeed.
And you've had a bit on recently with a brand new Paddock Club suite, which is launched here in Shanghai. Could you talk us through the new features of that?
It's been quite a big project. It's taken about 8 months, I think, in total to get it all ready. And China, being one of our popular races, meant that we had a total of 220 guests in the suite this weekend. And we started working on this quite some time ago by putting all of our ideas and concepts together and working closely with a design agency to come up with what we would consider our perfect hospitality suite. It's very grown up and it's got lots of really exciting elements in it, so that when guests are with us over the weekend, they have a little journey through the paddock and have nice little surprises throughout their time.
Okay, and we hear there's a pit lane reporter that's involved now. Could you tell us about that?
Yep, just after each practice session and qualifying, we do a live pit link down to the garage so that all of our guests feel very much involved in what's happening below them. We offer guests the opportunity to ask questions, and Millie, who is one of the account managers, guides them around the garage, explains what's happening at that time, and also will have interviews with Christian Horner, the team principal, or even Jonathan Wheatley, the team manager. Or if they're not available, there's always a team member that's happy to just explain to our guests upstairs what's happening.
There's also a few delicious treats up there I've spied.
We do have a sweetie bar in our suite, which has been quite a highlight for staff and guests, and very, very popular. In other races, we'll also have different treats, so whether it'll be a sushi bar or other food concepts. So it's always changing and evolving depending on where we're racing. And the same applies with the entertainment. So this week, in China, we've had Jam Master A, which is a huge Chinese DJ, and he came along with a traditional Chinese musician who played her instrument accompanying him. So really, really interesting to see something from the local markets.
Well, if you ever need anyone to taste test, I'll be more than happy to help.
I'll give you a call.
And then finally, it must be quite a different perspective to watch the track and watch the race, indeed, from up in Paddock Club. Could you just tell us what that's like to get a bird's eye view of those pit stops?
Definitely. Our guests are completely spoilt. So they have one side of the room is completely glass, which overlooks the pit stop box. So guests get a first-hand view of everything that's taking place literally below their feet. As well as that, they are surrounded by screens. So they have all of the timings and circuit map available for them. And we also have a very large bleacher seating area where guests can view the race, listen to the team radio, as well as watch from an extremely large screen.
Yeah, very cool. And then one more question. Can you give us any juicy gossip of guests that you've had up in Paddock Club?
We've had quite some enthusiastic dancers up in the suite on a number of occasions. Probably my favourite being at the Indian Grand Prix, where they had live Brazilian dancers. And they were a little scantily clad, much to the male guests' delight. And off they went dancing around the suite together. And I think they pretty much followed them into everybody else's suite as well.
Good. I trust you joined in
completely.
Okay, thanks very much.
Final word on the podcast, as usual, goes to Christian Horner. Katie spoke to him after the race.
Okay, so we got a fourth place in the end. Were you expecting more than that when we started the race today?
In reality, it was always going to be a different race for us, and our target was to try and get near the podium. Our pace on Saturday over a single lap on the soft tyres wasn't fantastic, so that's why we elected to qualify on the hard tyre and effectively run the race in reverse to the other cars. And we very, very nearly made it onto the podium at the end of the race there. Arguably, if we hadn't lost, you know, a fair bit of time in the first stint behind Nico Hülkenberg, we'd have certainly been on the podium.
Yeah, it was definitely exciting watching that. Did you think he was going to overtake Lewis?
We were all hoping he was, and it was obvious that Lewis had got into a bit of trouble and got a flat spot on his right front. Yeah, it was all pretty close. Another lap would have probably done it, but you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. But fourth place is still very valuable points. You know, we finished all three races with Sebastian. Obviously, you know, shocking luck for Mark, but. Yeah, you know, a lot of lessons learned today.
And why did you decide to start Mark from the pit lane?
Well, that is because we were unable to change the car significantly for the race. So we took downforce off, we lengthened the ratios, we changed the setup to really optimise the car, very similar to what we did with Sebastian in Abu Dhabi. And with these tyres, you know, the grip position, whilst obviously important, isn't everything. So we were able to make very quick headway. We stopped on the first lap, and Mark was, you know, already, you know, into a point scoring position. So a great shame that when he had the incident with Jean-Eric, damaging the front nose and picking up a front left puncture, having changed the nose at the stop and all four tyres, unfortunately it looks like a problem with the rear wheel nut has, you know, caused Mark to DNF, which is really a shame.
And he was going well before that incident. If that hadn't have happened, I know it's, you shouldn't really go if only, but if that hadn't have happened, where do you think he could have finished today?
I think he'd have been in the top six, to be honest with you. So it's a great shame, but it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, that happens in racing. And you know, his incident with Jean-Eric, and we'd have probably got a penalty anyway because of that, because he had it subsequent after the race. We'd have probably had a drive-through in the race because of the incident with Jean-Eric. But even despite that, we'd have probably still managed to squeak a point or two out of it. So yeah, it's a shame.
And where are you flying to now?
From here, we head off, Adrian and I heading off to Dubai, and then I've got a couple of meetings in Dubai before heading on to Bahrain. So not enough time really to go back to Europe and back out to the race in Bahrain, so we're going to use the time out here.
Well, that's it for our adventure here in China. Make sure you check out the website. You can look at all the pictures from the paddock, get all the latest team news. You can download the Red Bull F1 Spy app. Plus, you can also set the spy a challenge to do in the paddock. Get in touch with him on Twitter by using the hashtag SpyChallenge. We'll be back from the Bahrain Grand Prix in just 7 days' time. Until then, take care.